If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
My friends, the great experiment.
Discovery. Hidden. Trick.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick. And you people, you're all astronauts. Some kind of star. Trick.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast by the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. You know, like 98% of our viewership has not put it together that by saying that, we're saying this is a Star Trek podcast about new Star Trek.
They're just focused on the anus part.
Like, how long has this show been doing shows? Like 5 years? It's not a new show anymore. A show about new Star Trek.
Yeah, a new Star Trek podcast, not a new Star Trek podcast.
Indeed. How's your day going, man?
Oh, got a belly full of fish salad.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Those sound like comedy ingredients, Ben. Belly full of fish salad.
I actually did my first make a recipe on social media video during our recent Max Fun Drive where I showed a lunch that I have multiple times a week, which is just basically a tarted up coleslaw with some canned fish in there.
Delicious.
That's amazing. I'm a canned fish guy. I never think about sticking it in anything else. I had smoked oysters for lunch today. A little can of those and some crackers.
A little conserva?
Yeah. Real nice.
Boy, so we've both got the bounty of the sea and the can inside our birdies. We're ready to go.
Our emergency kits are empty completely, which is how you want it.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Do you want to jump into today's episode of Star Trek : Discovery?
Sure do, Ben. We should give a warning to our listeners, though. There may be some flashing images during this podcast.
Yeah. If you're sensitive to flashing images, don't listen to this podcast.
It is about Star Trek Discovery, Season 5, Episode 4, Face the Strange.
You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown.
Ben, it kind of bumps me a little bit when we get the warning message written in the Klingon subtitle font from, like, Season 1, Episode 1, Star Trek Discovery. Like, flashing lights!
Wait, did you actually get a flashing light message?
Yeah, did you not?
I did not see one.
You must have been looking away during. There was a flashing images warning written in the Klingon subtitle font. As like the image from the show.
Was this before or after the logo for Star Trek Discovery?
Think it was before.
Didn't happen on my screener. Wow. I must have gotten a different version of the screener. That's weird.
Don't love that.
I wonder if anything else is different.
Yeah, we're about to find out. Did you begin 15 hours ago? Did we watch the same episode?
I did begin 15 hours ago, and presumably this is before the end of the last episode, this 15 hours ago.
Right.
Because this is Maul and Locke meeting up with another greenie. This guy does not seem to be the same species as Locke, right?
No.
They just have similar complexions.
Yeah.
The shape of the loaf is different. The hue of the loaf, quite similar.
This is what happens when you're engaged in nefarious illegal activities. Who knows who's on the up and up?
Yeah.
From person to person. This guy's kind of a bag man.
Tin man.
But he's got an artifact. And he wants to change the terms. And why are you giving me the latinum inside a bag?
A bag?
I think a bag man would be all right with that.
Yeah. But he gets left holding the bag.
Mm.
And when he bare hand touches the latinum, he starts getting foamy at the mouth.
Doesn't it seem like if you're a bad guy, wearing leather gloves should be part of the whole drip?
Yeah, because we learned in the last episode that humans have unique fingerprints, but it's unique, like, dorsal ridges on saurians and unique spots on trills. So
sure.
Presumably, a lot of aliens haven't thought of not leaving fingerprints everywhere in the way that human criminals have, but Mal and Luck are definitely team leather glove.
I would be too.
Yeah. They take this guy out so that they can get this bug from him. And this is the bug that we saw get deposited on Adira's sleeve when they were down in the Star Trek caves. I also like the part of the scene that's about Locke remaining just like markedly less ambitious than Mal.
Well, this seems like a combination of a couple of tropes, right? There's the like, do we want to do one last bank robbery before we retire?
Right.
And also, like, the gender reversal of the whole idea of the guy being the one who wants that last one, the Clyde wanting to ride that last bank robbery into the sunset, and the Bonnie being the one who's like, this seems too dangerous, it's not worth the risk, etc.
Right, right.
He's the Bonnie! I should probably mention I've never seen Bonnie and Clyde.
It's good. It's really good. You should watch it.
I hope I have that right. I've seen Honey Bunny and what's his name? Honey Bunny and Clyde. Yeah. That's the same thing, right?
Same deal.
I don't think I need to see Bonnie and Clyde now.
I love you, Pumpkin.
I love you, Honey Bunny.
I think that it's interesting that, like, a kind of freedom is what awaits them if they successfully get the progenitor tech in Maul's mind, and that being persuasive to Locke. It seems like they're sort of on the run and unwilling to, like, try to make a deal with anybody to end that feeling of being pursued.
Speaking of feeling trapped in circumstances that past you has caused... Gray can't get Adira off the FaceTime. Seems like a lot of contact for a couple who just broke up, right?
Sometimes more contact after the breakup than before in cases like this.
Yeah. This is a scene whose sole purpose is to just show us the bug and what happened to the bug and how cool this bug is.
It is a cool bug, and it's creeping around Adira's quarters. Quite a noisy bug, given how stealthy it is otherwise.
Yeah, the take Adira gives toward the end of this scene sure makes it seem like they hear it or something.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, at that point, hiding behind a ceiling beam. And so Adira splits.
Can I ask you a question about this?
Yeah.
Do all crew people get orders over the PA for the entire ship to hear? Did it seem to you like Adira was getting called away by Stamets, like, on the PA, on the one MC?
It did sound boomy in that way.
That's how you know you're in trouble.
Adira, could you readjust the deuterium manifold on deck 9? It shifted again after the jump.
I also just thought it was funny that this surreptitious bug was creeping around and making all this fucking noise in the room. And then the second Adira is out the door, it vanishes into the beam.
I like the head fake this bug does, which is like you see that it's a bug. It acts like a bug. You have an understanding of what bugs do in spycraft. This is not that kind of bug. It's not listening at all. It does not give a shit what you're saying.
Yeah. You think it's listening in on your early 20s romance that is maybe not as over as you just said it was?
Get over yourself.
So the ship has arrived at the location that was given to them by clue number two. Doesn't really seem like there's anything here, and they're scanning around, and Reese tosses out an idea that Rainer kind of curb stomps the moment it flies out of Reese's mouth. And Burnham is like, okay, everybody keep doing the scanning and whatnot. Rainer, why don't the two of us go have a little chat? And they meet up in the ready room to talk about the way Rainer is first officering it.
Unacceptable. Not how we do things here.
Rainer accepts that he stands inside the ball kicking machine, but he is all too willing to place Michael Burnham on a similar machine. He kind of smashes back, doesn't he?
Yeah, there is a debate about whether this crew are too familiar with each other going on between him and Michael Burnham. And his contention is that this kind of casual attitude that everybody has is going to make people sloppy. And, you know, just tossing out ideas is not really the move right now when we are on a red directive mission and we need to be solving problems faster than they pop up.
By Rainer taking this position, he's playing Gene Roddenberry here. Gene Roddenberry famously did not want fraternization among the crew.
Right. Or conflict among the crew.
Yeah. And at many points, Rainer is called to his face, like, just a burn boy. Just like, your war is over. You're not fit for this time. You know? Like, in a way that you can make the argument about a lot of Gene Roddenberry's ideas. I wonder if they're doing that kind of play with him.
Yeah. That's one of those things about Star Trek that now that we have, you know, 25 different versions of the franchise to consider, especially, is really interesting to me. The way, you know, TNG was Star Trek talking about Star Trek in some ways, mm-hmm. like kind of reconsidering some of the ideas of the original series. And then in many ways, every series after that has been, to one extent or another, a conversation about some of the things that it liked about the previous series and some of the things it felt like the previous series maybe didn't get right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's interesting to think about Rainer as being representative of an older way of thinking within the context of Star Trek and not just within the context of the universe of this episode.
Right. Yeah. Rainer does that thing where, like, he's not the guy in the room with the most pips, and he kind of forgets himself here. And he does that thing where he says something and he tries to catch it in the air. You can't catch it.
Yeah, like that moment where you're like, you feel like you're right, but you also feel like you said the right thing the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you're kind of on shaky ground in terms of like getting your point across. So he has to kind of apologize about that. And the conversation turns into one about like change being really hard. And that's got to be so frustrating when you're like trying to make a bigger point about like command styles. It was like, no, like obviously change is hard and I'm used to being captain and I'm not right now, but that's not what I was trying to say.
That bug we saw before is now in engineering, and this scene with Stamets there is interesting because it shows you where this thing is headed, but also suggests a universe completely absent of anything to smash bugs with. Like, what could there possibly be to smash this thing if Stamets chose to? I guess he could take off his boot, but that's it. Or I guess if you want to use your hand, have you ever used your hand? Have you ever raw-dogged a bug?
I've raw-dogged a bug. I really wanted, like, a piece of Tupperware and a somewhat more rigid card that had previously been on the fridge, slid under it, and see if he could like safely catch and release.
Knowing what we know about this bug, I kind of wish Stamets had tried to go at it with his hand. Yeah. And so he withdraws like super old hand after. I love scenes in Star Trek where there's a super old hand.
Man,
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get one in this episode, but it would have been nice stakes raising to get a couple, you know?
Yeah.
Some big, long fingy nails.
Like, other engineers are in the department, like, oh, Stamets, what'd you do with your... Oh, you know what? Just fist bump me with the other one, dude. Actually, no, wait. Is this what you like jacking it with? I mean, I've heard of like going European style using the other hand, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is.
Is that like going May-December style?
Yeah.
Back in the ready room, they're talking and there's kind of a power outage. And this is after this bug like went into one of the panels in engineering. So they get word from the bridge that something's going on, and they're like, okay, we'll transport her back. And one of the scariest transporter images I think we've seen yet in Trek is Burnham and Rayner trying to transport to the bridge, and everything goes crazy, and they're kind of like transporting in and out of existence in one spot a bunch of times.
How sure were you that we were going to get a Brainer episode?
Yeah,
they should have popped up in this new time conjoined, because then they'd really get to understand each other.
I'm a totally unique sentient being, plus I'm cool as f-.
I mean, the fight sequence with early Michael Burnham later, you know, having to use the back of the head as much as they do to have the fight extra would have just been too upsetting, I think.
Yeah. They got to walk the old-fashioned way to the bridge because their transport blurpers don't work. And what's interesting about where they end up is how often that window is used to give a sense of place and time. Because when they wake back up, they're in a warp tunnel, it looks like. And we find out when they walk to the bridge that, no, that's not a warp tunnel. That is time travel.
Time travel.
And the Red Angel's out there, too.
Yeah, and everybody is... conked out on the floor, and like Saru and Tilly are there, and there's lots of rubble.
And they're wearing their old uniforms.
Yeah.
Good thing they didn't throw them away.
Michael Burnham thinks really quick. She's like, shoot, temporal prime directive, we got to get out of here before they see us. And they run back off the bridge and are talking about the fact that they have switched times, and everything starts to go all blinky again, and they're very scientific, and they're like shouting out observations about the phenomenon as it's happening to them. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they jump again in time, and now they are on Discovery in dry dock, and like the wall has a section open, and the Golden Gate Bridge is out there.
Pretty good day at the office if you're the trade working in this part of the ship in dry dock, right? Beautiful day.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Uh-oh, a couple of surprise inspections. You don't like that, but pretty good.
I like that this guy is deep enough in the weeds of just being like a guy who wrenches on starships when they come into dry dock that he doesn't know what uniforms look like in his era. And he's just like, oh, shit, am I in trouble? You guys look like you're dressed differently than I am. So I can only assume that this is the inspection.
It's like that thing that happened with red hats. Like, if you see them from any distance, you're like, oh, God. Oh, no. And this guy, like, sees a red uniform, and he's like, oh, command. Like, obviously command. Like, doesn't matter the cut or the finish or the pitch or whatever.
Those guys are in charge.
I mean, except in his time, it's not, right? Like, it would be
yellow
gold
for command. Yeah.
Huh.
Shoot. He's like, these guys are doomed. They're in red.
Or maybe he's just one of those trades that pops a mega dose gummy before doing his trowel work.
Do it, I'm ready to go.
Yep. It's like hundreds of years in the future. My tolerance is very high.
When I'm rolling out to a job site, I'm taking 4 5-milligram gummies, chasing it with 24 ounces of coffee at a 7-Eleven. Making the day that follows a little weird.
It's a California speedball for this old Boston worker.
I love the tour we take of the many seasons of Star Trek Discovery here. I love being reminded of Control. Remember the Control season?
Remember when they fought Kontreland?
Yeah.
I was like amazed thinking about this episode being one that was in this season before they knew that this was the last season.
Yeah.
Like, it really does feel like a, let's think about some of the great adventures that Star Trek Discovery has taken us on episode.
And it really primes you for cameo, right? Like, are we gonna see a Jason Isaacs here? I was on the lookout the entire ep.
Who were your big cameos that you were hoping for? Because for me, it was Jason Isaacs and Osira were the two that I was really wishing we would get,
yeah,
and we didn't.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was definitely Lorca, but also like maybe Ash Tyler could have been.
That would have been hot.
Could have been fun. Or Admiral Bob.
Oh, man.
You
Bring
know?
Back Admiral Bob. Why not?
We got some greatest hits on Discovery for characters.
You telling me Admiral Bob's not picking up the phone?
She'll pick up the phone. She might not like what you're offering. She'll pick it up.
Yeah. So they are starting to try to narrow down what is happening to them. And Temporal Anomaly seems to be out because they were scanning their asses off when they arrived in this part of space. They probably would have picked something up. They don't seem to be having any neurological effects that would indicate that this is something that is being done to them, just done to their minds. Rayner comes up with the idea that this is a time bug, and we get a little hat tip to Year of Hell. This is Krenim technology.
Yeah. Like that name check.
Yeah. These are a kind of weapon that is left over from the Temporal War that gets ships just jumping around randomly and therefore off the field of battle in a time travel war.
Like all tech that gets smaller with every generation, we've gone from torpedo to little bug.
Yeah. Yeah, the Krenim used to have this as like an entire ship.
Yeah. Pretty wild.
Michael Burnham's like, cool, well, if it's a time travel thing, Stamets can help on account of he lives outside of time.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing how little explanation this needs at this point in Star Trek Discovery.
Imagine dating someone who lives outside of time. Imagine what they desire for how quickly you cohabitate or get married, yeah, or whatever. I guess it would never matter to them.
What would happen if Stamets met Wesley Crusher?
I mean, in my case, a change of the channel. I love this cut to Stamets in Six Bay because this is the moment where he took that piece of shrapnel to the Birdie, and he's with it in his own way. He's with it enough to be asking for things like Zora and wanting to go to engineering, but all of these requests are confusing the hell out of Culber.
Culber has not heard of Zora. Culber can't imagine why Stamets would rather be in engineering than getting the giant girder taken out of his chest.
Culber's like, if it helps to, like, reset you in time, I can unzip my uniform top and just show you how ripped and exploded I am. Would that help ground you?
Is he administering the induced coma shot at the end of the scene? Because I was like, oh no, is Stamets going to be KO'd for the rest of this?
But, not at all.
That does not seem to be something that travels through time with him.
The greatest trek is yet to come.
Another blurp, and it's relative calm this time for Burnham and Rayner. So they head to engineering, and in the turbo lift, Rayner and Burnham have this conversation about, like, well, you know, if you're the captain, your biomechanical identification is going to be useful to get you in places around the ship. But it's actually a liability at this point, right? Because if the computer is scanning for people and it finds two, that could be a problem. So why don't you clerk yourself from the computer? And why don't you do that in front of me so I can see your command code during? And this was such Chekhov's command code here. I thought,
I know,
for sure he was going to use that for some bad idea, but maybe not this episode, but maybe in a future episode that'll end up happening.
If your entire technology thing is built around everybody having holographic computers that pop out of their chest, you need to have the little asterisk in place of the actual digit when you're punching in your code.
Or make it look like if you're looking at it off center, that shit just disappears.
Right. Yeah. Can the hologram have that 3M film that car dealerships put on the screens of their computers?
Didn't it look like in this scene, though, this was happening directly in front of Rainer?
It really did. Yeah. It was like cheated to him so he could really read it.
Yeah. So the turbolift doors open, and right outside they get into a fight with Osiris' goons. And this is one of the two very developed fight scenes we get in this episode. It goes on and on.
Yeah. The amount of fight choreography in this episode is really off the charts. Mm-hmm. There's just like a whole bunch of guys in motorcycle helmets, neck chopping them and stuff, and sort of looks like they're going to get overtaken. And Jet Reno comes to the rescue, looking awesome as fuck.
Great moment for Jet Reno. I love how she just moves into this scene, drops a couple of lines, and then moves out of it.
Like, yeah.
Completely unchecked.
Yeah. Hey, don't worry about this ship invasion. We're going to take care of it.
Where are you going, Jet Reno?
Where do you get your confidence? Yeah. Like, how do I buy some of that?
The next blurb makes it seem as though they've arrived inside an icy disco. And what I thought was that they were inside the ship, inside that ship eating ice.
Yeah, I did too.
That's not this at all.
No, they're in the conference room. They didn't make it to engineering. They have not made contact with Stamets yet. And the ship is dusty and decaying, and they go out on the bridge, and Zora seems like disoriented and confused. Find out this is 30 years later, and the worst case scenario with the progenitor tech has happened. Maul and Locke got it, and everybody that lived on Disco is dead, and Disco has just been floating empty with the view screen closed, and they persuade Zora to throw open the view screen and RSVP HQ.
Does Zora have the ability to fly the ship wherever she wants? This seemed like the longer I thought about this moment, the more questions I had, which are like, yeah, I understand Zora's grieving the loss of the Federation and all of her maybe friends or whatever on the crew. But like, if all of a sudden your crew people are dead, that kind of frees you up for adventure, doesn't it?
Yeah, we never get an exterior shot of the ship in this episode. We don't know if it's flyable in this time period. I mean, the HQ is really fucked up. There is a ship out there that gets identified as a Breen ship. So maybe Zora just wants to keep nose toward that ship because you're never supposed to turn your back on a Breen.
I swear I've not had an edible today, but like... If you had the ability to go anywhere in the universe, basically, with the disco drive and explore anything or meet any kind of new species or whatever, like, would that change the scope of your grief when you grieve the thousands of people that died at HQ? I think it kind of would, wouldn't it? If you were an all-knowing supercomputer with a ship that could take you anywhere, I would be sad. I would mourn them. But also, I wouldn't keep that thing in park for 30 years. Like, I'm going to go try to get into adventures, maybe as a way to honor their memories.
Well, the ship seems fucked up. Like, let's talk about how Zora, like, can't think of certain things when they ask Zora questions.
Yeah. Yeah, Zora's had a core injury.
But not totally without faculties, because they're like, okay, well, we've been traveling in time, but we're also traveling in space. Can the information our tricorders have collected from these jumps be compiled with the data about where the ship has been going and all of the jumps to establish a little bit better, like, what we're dealing with here? And Zora compiles this information and gives them a little program that will predict every time they have a jump coming up. And what do you know? The next one's 10 seconds out.
Oh, that's bad timing.
So now that you've seen the awful future, if you fail this season of Star Trek Discovery, go ahead and see if you can get things back on track, guys.
Our next scene is in engineering with Stamets and Jet Reno. As cool as ever, Jet Reno is.
I like you too.
And as uncool as maybe Stamets has ever been, when he's forced to improvise his way through a scene where he's trying to make Jet feel as though he's not crazy when he asks very time travel specific questions.
Are you stuck in a time loop right now, Stamets?
What? No.
Can you imagine, like, if you just got transported back to a day of work 10 years ago when you still work for major aerospace company,
uh-huh,
and just had to persuade everyone that it was a normal day for you, and you had to like reproduce all of the things that you did that day.
I'm going around encouraging folks to put all the bolts into all the doors, and they're like, what the hell got into that guy? That guy doesn't even work here. He's a contractor.
So yeah, he has some questions about a time loop and how you might stop one, theoretically. And Jet Reno has some great advice on this, just top of mind. Jet Reno's thought about this a lot. And when Michael Burnham and Rayner show up, Stamets is able to clear engineering by making everybody think that mushrooms are going to grow in their lungs because there's a spore leak.
Yeah, I'm a little disturbed that my crew doesn't know that isn't a real thing.
Oh my God, what a terrifying image.
They get to work on the Sporlothelioma commercial that needs to play on all the ship stations. Have you or a loved one been exposed to mycelial spores? You may be deserving of compensation.
Stamets knows where the bug is, and Rayner's like, okay, well, let's get it. And he's like going for it. Another opportunity for old hand that this episode does not give us.
God, I know.
Do you think that they were just like, that's too much biting TNG's rhyme if he reaches for it and gets big fingy nails?
We've showed a picture of Captain Picard in this season. Like, it's okay to show old hand.
Show us old hand. That's what we came here for. You know what? This is not my
Boo!
Star Trek. My Star Trek would show us the freaky old hand with the long fingernails.
Show us the old hand.
Post old hand on main.
We need to score a lot of laps fast.
Licensed businessman.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Stamets is able to demonstrate here that you can't just take the bug out from behind this panel. It would be a cross the streams moment if you did.
Yeah.
So what they need to do is build a chronoton stabilizer, which, as we see later, looks like a little smokeless ashtray.
Yeah.
And the plan at this point is, look, we're going to be blurping away all the time, so let's, no matter what, wherever we end up, meet on deck 13. Evidently, a very empty deck most of the time.
And if in 10 years the three of us aren't married, we'll meet up on deck 13 and form a throuple. So, yeah, they are now highly motivated to fix the problem now that they know the terrible, terrible outcome. They have to get some holodeck materials, and Michael's going to go get them from her quarters because her quarters now have a built-in holodeck in this time period. So she's running up there to do that. And boy, wouldn't you know it, Book comes back from the gym looking all sweaty and hot and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to talk to her. She's like on a timeline.
Is Book not allowed to use the captain's personal holodeck in the quarters? Because why is he going to the gym? If you could
have the gym.
If you could hollow the gym, you don't have to go anywhere. If you could hollow the mountain you want to climb, or the track you want to run, or the barbells you want to lift.
That's it, get it.
Maybe he's sweaty because he was doing something else in the holodeck and he wanted to go use one that Michael was much less likely to randomly walk into.
Right. What you've done is described a hollow suite. I see. Michael's like, you know, you have been going to the gym kind of a lot, sometimes multiple times a day.
Are you going for the record? It's an interesting scene, right? Because she's kind of in this, I am trying as hard as I can to be moved on from you headspace. And he is from a different time and is therefore in the like honeymoon phase of like, we just moved in together, babe. And you got this now that you're captain of the ship energy.
Yeah, the moment in any relationship where the couple is just nice to each other. Special time.
It's good.
I think of that time fondly.
I loved the tension of this, though. The, like, he is just being so fucking sweet, and you can see the gears turning. Like, how do I persuade him to be sweet in a pithier way so I can get the fuck out of here and go build the gadget?
And also, like, we have 4.5 minutes. Could we knock it out here?
Yeah.
And, like, just reset?
Like, look at
the
this chest. Look at the chest on this guy. This is, I gave this up? Why did I give this up?
That kiss and the I love yous that they both have at the end. Just amazing moment. A quintessential Sonequa Martin Green take here. Like, conveying 1,000 different feelings. All of them with some pretty dewy eyes, you know?
She's great.
She's not hanging tear, because that would be suspicious. She's just feeling it.
Yeah. They get the gadget together. I mean, it does sort of seem like the cup that they're going to put over the bug and then slide the piece of paper under.
It's really fun looking.
But the bug is shielded in a way that is unexpected.
Why does the opening look like a vagina, though?
I didn't notice the opening looking like that.
It's the fleshlight for a chode.
Size 54 waist, 10 inch legs, fucking junk.
Yeah, I mean, you answer a 4-question quiz and they send you the fleshlight,
yeah,
perfectly tailored to your needs.
Oh, it's so frustrating when this doesn't work.
Yeah, this is something that they learn as the lights start to flicker. And I love everybody's, like, I'm sick and tired of time travel face to commercial break. Yeah.
Yeah. We're on deck 13 again. And Stamets tells them something about this bug shield. It's that inside the shield, time moves incredibly fast. And they can't just turn that shield off. So what Stamets suggests is something that I think true blue Star Trek nerds know about. The warp bubble kind of protects you from the relativity of space travel, like the relativity consequences of space travel, in such a way that busting out of this bubble would make possible the idea of, like, if you do it at the same time as you try to capture this bug, the coincidental nature of that would render this time shield inert, and then you'd catch the bug and then mission accomplished, right? Did I explain that in a way that made any sense?
That basically comports with what I was picking up from the episode. So, yeah, I think you got it right.
Also, there is one very important piece of information that Stamets conveys here. He's like, in the timeline where we do this, you can do anything to anyone. Because once we bust out of the warp bubble and catch the bug, it renders all of the shit that we did moot. Like, it's a freebie. It's a hall pass.
Right. So the temporal prime directive following has been necessary up till now. But now in this 14-minute visit to this time period, go sick.
Yeah. What I'm saying is maybe for a couple of these time jumps, we take some 14-minute hall passes and just like... fuck around. There's no such thing as morality in the time loop, baby.
Nothing matters.
Wait, does that also mean that the record would not stand?
Oh, man.
I don't think the record counts.
Yeah, or at least it has an asterisk next to it.
The body remembers, though.
The body holds a record.
It's so weird, like, if you're into time travel, like, the body and time have different records.
Mm-hmm.
Very confusing.
Could you travel to a time where your refractory period is, like, really, really short?
I'm like the character in Quantum Leap. Like, with every leap, I hope it's the one where I have a much shorter refractory period.
That was the goal of that show?
Yeah.
Oh.
He never says it, but you know that's what he's going for.
So they feel like this is the one to go for it in, and we are on a Lorca-era disco.
They're gonna show him, right?
They're not, because he's away on an away mission.
God damn it! Oh! I miss him so much.
If they'd showed him, but not showed him injecting shit into his eyeballs.
Yeah.
I feel like that would have been a perfect episode.
It would have been so great. You think he picked up the phone?
I don't know. I wonder about this. I feel like if they knew this was the last season when they were making this episode, maybe they would have expent more ordnance on this.
Incredible call. Yeah. Yeah, I bet. Not only from that direction, but in the cameo direction. Like, people would have wanted to participate.
Go do a Goodwill cameo.
Yeah. Trek. Would you look
at that? The big snag here is that Arium was left in command of the ship, and Michael Burnham is going to have to go up there and convince everyone on the bridge to do this, go to the highest warp possible, and then break the warp bubble scheme while Stamets and Rayner work on their end of the scheme down in engineering. And present day Michael Burnham has like one awkward bump into Linus on the way up.
Red is definitely your color.
And then he gets off the elevator and vintage Michael Burnham gets on. Uh-oh.
Burnham Blue, not wearing a comm badge, seems not happy to see Burnham Red. In a way that you can understand, not just because this era of Michael Burnham is paranoid and angry and recently punished for her mutineering ways, But because, like, when you're on Star Trek and you're confronted by your doppel, it's either fight or kiss. Which is her lifelong ambition going to be?
That is the big question. And this is the second of those two great big fight sequences we talk about, because vintage Burnham doesn't buy the time travel story. And man, what a complicated scene to block and shoot and execute. Like, there are a couple of really cool moments where you see both Michael Burnhams on screen, like making physical contact with each other while the camera is moving. Even with all of the like deep fake technology in the world, it's tough stuff to make look really good. And I think that they did a great job with this.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, you think back to Star Trek VI, you think back to the Thomas and Will Riker episode, like Star Trek has tried this many times. And this, I think, represents the best it's ever been done for them.
Oh, so good.
Really, really great. Why does Burnham Red win? It seems like Burnham Blue, having just been in prison, would be more seasoned of a fighter, would have youth on her side also. I was kind of surprised at the outcome here.
Yeah, I mean, some of it felt a little bit just like luck.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be so hard to fight a person who could neck pinch you at any point. It's one thing to dodge and hit, but like, to play the fight game where you cannot be touched.
Yeah, you got to keep your neckle region away from them at all costs.
Yeah. Can't imagine. Anyway, Burnham Red neck pinches Burnham Blue, and we cut over to engineering where Stamets has kicked out the crew yet again. This is a fun runner that they're doing with Stamets now. Even Rayner is impressed here at all the myriad ways he comes up with to clear out the department. I just ripped a big fart! Everybody get out of here!
That was faster than your spore breach excuse.
Yeah, so everyone splits and they're working the problem. Stamets is trying to use the old version of the computer and it's getting a little frustrated. And Rayner kind of kicks him some shit. And they have an interesting conversation where Stamets convinces Rayner to press pause on the rough candor routine, which is an ironic request coming from Stamets.
And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Stamets is like, wait, are you my dad?
Stamets persuades Rayner to actually be helpful in this moment.
I love Stamets's angle here, which is like, you think you're stressed. Try saving the universe over and over again because of what's in these forearms.
Yeah. Season after season.
Yeah.
I have to keep this ship in one piece and save the whole ass universe. So Rayner's like, yeah, like you have made some good points, sir. Touche. What do you need me to do? And goes over and, you know, reroutes EPS or something.
Does his comment about them both being old dogs, is that in reference to Stamets being a past person and then like old in that way versus Rayner, who is like an old in the modern way?
I thought a lot about that. One thing I thought about in this episode particularly was like, I don't really feel like we've gotten a great sense of how people in the Federation think of the Discovery crew. Like, are they like kind of like interesting curiosities who lived in a time that's like almost unthinkably primitive by their standards? Or because of the temporal war, is it just like everybody's used to people from all different parts of the timeline interacting with each other now or what?
Yeah. It's a lot. It's even too much.
It is. It's too fucking much. And also too much is Michael Burnham trying to talk the season one Discovery Bridge crew into letting her commandeer the ship.
I love how she goes around the horn here, telling people about themselves. It's a thing you have to do when you're a time traveler. You got to be really good at those biographical details and not just the stuff that you can get out of a file, like real juicy personal shit.
You think I'm gonna knife you in your sleep because of your snoring? I won't, by the way. Thank you.
I would suck ass at this.
I would forget half of their names.
Like, didn't you say something about, like, being into chess or something? Not you? No?
Okay.
I love how the Arium in the room is permitted to hang there for a while before, like, Burnham finally decides, like, nothing's going to convince these people, like, a terrible Arium story.
Yeah.
And Arium played by Hannah Cheeseman. Like, she came back to the metallic loaf. She got into the loaf pan.
She did it one more time.
Yeah. This moment is really funny, if you want it to be, because the story she tells about Arium is like, you know, you made the ultimate sacrifice for the crew. And the crew people are like, no! No way! Like,
that's not her!
And Arium's like, no, I am actually a badass like that. Like, that does sound like me. It sounds like something heroic I could actually do. Totally contradicting everyone else in the crew. They're like, what? This Arium? She cheats at cards.
The one that's in command of Discovery right now? No.
Pretty great.
She would never give up like that.
I would.
But once she's tipped over, the rest of the crew follow suit, and this is convincing.
Yeah. So we have 3 minutes left. Looks pretty good. Like, we're actually going to save the day. But then Reese and Vintage Burnham show up in engineering, holding guns, and putting a stop to what Rayner and Stamets are up to. And this turns into a big standoff where, with 90 seconds left, Rayner is called on to establish trust with Reese and then subsequently Blue Burnham. I think that, like, half of how he establishes trust is the story he tells her about the, like, first time she stood on the Discovery Bridge feeling like she had no right to be there. But fully 50% of it is just him chesting up to the gun and just being like, you're going to have to fucking shoot me if you really believe what you're claiming you believe.
The part they cut out of this scene is Rayner going, I lost my ship and my command. You'd be fucking doing me a favor. Please, God, just end this for me.
Pull it. I want you to do it.
I'm on a crew with a bunch of deep thinking, feeling people. I don't fit in here. Here, aim a little higher.
Put it in my mouth. Put it in my mouth. I'm the only person on this crew that isn't hanging tear half the time.
Here, I'll suck on a hose. Reese, put yours in too.
Have you ever been double penetrated by a TOS era phaser? Well, I have.
I love when Rayner has his moment with Reese over the curvy Connies. He's like, hey, I know what you like. You like those Constitution class. So do I. Why do you think I turned my left hand old? Because I like old things. Sexually.
Look at the curves.
You understand, right, Reese? And Reese is looking around like, I do not have this much backstory. I am a bridge crew character on Star Trek Discovery. You are drawing in all of the margins here.
Anyways, it's successful. They persuade them to let them try their chronometric hockey puck. And Rayner sticks his hand in the field that the bug is inside of right as they break the warp bubble. And we blip back to the present. We lost 6 hours, but they, like, check the timeline and everything is exactly as it's supposed to be. Rayner has a nasty case of old hand, but other than that, everything is okay. And apparently old hand is a fixable disease in this era.
I'm going to look to the camera right now, and I want to talk to whoever made this decision on Star Trek Discovery. For 5 seasons now, you've shown us the dog dick fingers of Saru. And you just show us old hand kind of in passing, like kind of moving through the screen, making it impossible to glimpse it at all. Why don't you want to show us that old hand? What are you hiding?
Well, and also, like, making it curable. Like, make Rainer have old hand for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'd like that a lot. I'm sure he would, too.
That would be great for his character. Like now I've got old hand on one of my hands.
He and Reese become great friends from here.
Yeah.
Because you know Reese likes old things.
Yeah. They're like arm wrestling so that Reese can really like get a good look at it. Oh, yeah.
Oh, hand it is really it old. Fell into my mouth again. Hey, Michael Burnham is really happy for Rainer because yeah. Rainer finally gets it. Knowing people is the only reason that we achieved mission accomplishment status here.
Turns out those meetings she made him do in last week's episode were a necessary evil.
How much did you want Rainer to come back over the top of her with this and was like, yeah, and I only needed 20 seconds with each of them. So who's right? Who's really right? 20 fucking seconds.
I mean, we're lucky that one of the people that showed up with Michael Burnham in engineering was one of the people that made it to the future.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There was a lot of people that could have been that it wasn't. So they scan around and Locke and Maul's ship, it seems like, has been here in the like 6 hours that they lost and then warped away. And they don't have any conclusive idea of where they warped away to.
They should have done something on Disco in those 6 hours, right? Like they should have nudified a bunch of people, posed them in embarrassing situations.
That would have been cool. Yeah, were they like just frozen in time when this was all going on?
You never see any of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it was one of those blink of an eye time jumps.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
And why is Commander McDuff there?
Yeah, well, why can we only hear this episode?
What an amazing callback that would have been. Like, that's the dun-dun-dun at the end of the episode.
Call all the TNG things back.
Like, I don't remember that crew person. But then again, yeah. Like, do we know any of these people, really?
It seems like Locke and Maul may be now ahead of them in the race to solve all the clues, but they don't have the artifact, and Disco got out from under their dirty little trick, so everybody seems pretty happy at the end of this one. Did you like this episode, Adam?
She'll always bring it home.
Tell you one thing. I like Rainer as a character, and I like Callum Rennie as an actor. I don't know how the take at the end where Rainer walks in and his hand is good. Like, you know the zep that you can do with a hand and a couple of fingers? Like, yo! Like... Why is the camera doing the work of the actor here? Because Rainer just walks in like usual, like hand swinging, confident ex-captain.
Camera goes in for a punch in on the hand, and then it's like he exchanges a little glance with Captain Burnham, like, well, hand's back.
Yeah. You know, like in a lot of episodes, I just kind of want more hand stuff. But here's how I feel, really. Like, I think this is one of my favorite episodes of Discovery, and that's because I like time jump as a genre. And I thought a lot about how much I liked Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, that time loop episode. Mm-hmm. And this didn't hit me as hard as that one, because I think this episode suggests that Rainer's transformation is as significant as what we learned about Michael Burnham in that other episode, and it's just not. Like, they're not equivalent. Like, things happen in that season one episode that I thought were, like, powerful and sad to people that we were just starting to get to know. Nothing on that same level happens here.
Right.
And also, something about the tone of the ending didn't feel quite right, because all of the dialogue is circling around this idea of, well, Maul and Locke were here. Now Maul and Locke are gone. We don't know where they went. Their warp trail disappeared. So I guess we're just going to sit here and try harder to figure out what the next move is. But something doesn't quite fit with like the swell of the music and the appearance of the credits with that idea. the idea that they lost. Like, this is an episode about, I guess, preventing the future demise of the Federation, but like, their mission is really fucked up right now. And I don't think it should be treated as the victory that it is. So tonally, I think the ending just felt weird to me in that way. What about you?
I keep wondering, like, doesn't the fact that they have two pieces of the artifact, like, permanently forestall Mon Lok from... Isn't the artifact the key to the whole thing? Or I guess it isn't. I guess that it demonstrably isn't if the Federation gets destroyed in the future if they don't succeed. The rules of the game seem a little bit ill-defined still. So, like, to your point, the, hey, well, at least we all didn't die feels like kind of a hollow victory.
Except Arium. Just want to say, Arium is still very dead and seems pretty cool with it.
Arium was quick to buy into ensuring her future death in a way that retrospectively, like, makes us feel better about her death.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I like a time jump episode a whole lot more than I like a time travel episode, I will say.
Hard to stick the landing at the end of those, though, huh?
It is. And I think this one was good. And I think mainly my punch up is all in terms of bringing back beloved cast members. Would have loved to see Rin in there, you know? Like, there's a whole bunch of characters from past episodes that I would have loved to see pop up.
Yeah.
Anyways, do you want to see if we have anything in the priority one inbox?
I can see it just at the view screen, Ben.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Just one priority one message here today, Adam, and it's of a promotional nature. Goes like this. I know you guys are busy with your current podcasts and life and such, but I would like to gently encourage you to consider finishing Battlestar Galactica. I love that show so much, and I love you guys so much, so it's a perfect match! I haven't even finished your ep of the second episode yet, and perhaps you already concluded at the end of that that you will indeed do that. If not, please know it would be the greatest day of my life if you responded yes to this proposal. I may have had a couple of drinks. The call to action is more pod, please.
Oh, Elizabeth, yes, 1,000 times yes.
Wow, we just made Elizabeth from New Hampshire the happiest lady.
You know, I hate that Elizabeth from New Hampshire did this, like, on the Jumbotron, where I kind of felt obligated.
Right, we're in front of a crowd, and there's kind of a lot of social pressure to say yes.
Yeah, I'm definitely feeling that. I'm also full of beer and hot dogs, so that's compromised my judgment.
We had a lot of fun with that one. We had a lot of fun with a lot of those pilots. I wouldn't be surprised if some of them started happening in the main feed and others started happening behind the paywall.
Yeah.
I guess pilot season just revealed us to be great big sci-fi TV nerds.
Yeah, I would say were there to be other gaps in Star Trek scheduling, or if we just feel like it in the bonus feed, we should do a little more Battlestar Galactica. I think it's, personally, it's at the top of my list.
Wow.
For pilot season projects adjacent to the show we're doing. But yeah, that's how I feel about it. How do you feel about it? Bottom of your list?
It's like right below Space Precinct. Which means it's second. It's number two.
Where are all the Space Precinct P1s? I mean, I keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling on our spreadsheet, and I keep doing that Control F, Space Precinct, Control F, Ketchup. Not finding them.
You need to hit Control K for Ketchup.
Okay.
Ketchup.
Thank you to Elizabeth for her P1 if you'd like to get a P1. MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin!
I think a lot about that scene with when Michael Burnham and Booker together in her quarters. And, like, the choices she could have made but didn't, and the choice that she eventually did make in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a quarter Larkin there. I feel like she knows on one level she's got to make it seem like she's from Book's universe in that moment. So she's got to do a little makeout. She's got to do a little I love you.
Right.
But it's restrained. You think he can tell? He's got to tell. Is my Edward Larkin Book for not being able to tell? I think I just talked myself into Book.
Wow. It does feel like you would be able to tell that something was off.
Think of how often you're right in your own relationship with a energy just feels weird. What's going on?
Probably should ask in what way I have fucked something up.
For Book, not to ask that question, not to notice that this was not his universe lady friend. Yeah, he's my Edward Larkin. What about you?
Wow.
I think we both got it there.
Solid Larkin. Minus that lady that like wanders into engineering at one point and just gets shouted at, get out!
Get out!
I feel like she is me, you know?
You forget what an asshole Stamets was and how there really hasn't been a reckoning for that at any point.
Yeah. He's kind of playing season one Stamets.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, there was a line in this episode about how the tardigrade DNA softened his personality a little bit, which...
Cut over to Culber, and he's like, and softened something else.
Meanwhile, I just get harder and harder. What's that about? But I was like, oh, does that coincide? Like, I can't quite put my finger on when Stamets got less asshole-ish, but it seems not to be season one in my memory.
It seems like if you're pissed off at the people you work with, one great way to put things in perspective is to give you the responsibility of saving the universe over and over again.
Yeah,
your workplace true. Relationships become less important to you at that point.
Well, Adam, we got one last segment to do on the show here today. This is a segment called Warning Boys, where we read nice reviews or nice comments people have shared on social media to try to encourage Friends of DeSoto to do the same. One of the only reliable ways we have of growing the show is through nice reviews on Apple Podcasts and word of mouth on social media. So if you like the show, recommend it or give us a nice review. You might hear your words coming out of our mouths.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy. A warning buoy.
This one is a review of The Greatest Generation, our other hit Star Trek podcast, and it's from Apple Podcasts in the UK. Best Trek show. I've been a listener for a long time and thought it best I actually write a review. Ben and Adam produce an amazing podcast any Star Trek fan should listen to. It's not only hilarious, but it's informative, comforting, and has just the right amount of everything you could ever want. I did a few watch-alongs as I went, and it really reignited my love for Star Trek and kept me entertained for years. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Bristol Eddie, for writing that great review.
That was great. Thanks, Bristol Eddie.
I think we should probably leave it right about there, huh?
I think that's what we came here to do, and I think we both became nicer having done it.
Yeah. We didn't even have to have our DNA altered for that.
No.
Alrighty, we'll be back at you next week with more Star Trek Discovery.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced by Wendy Pretty, and this episode was edited by Ryan Whedon. Next week on Friday, we'll be back with coverage of Season 5, Episode 5 of Star Trek Discovery. It's called Mirrors. Thanks to Adam Ragusea, who composed the theme music for Greatest Trek. You can find his YouTube cooking channel and podcast by searching for Adam Ragusea online. Also, thanks to Nick Dickmore for creating the show art, and thanks to Rob Adler and Bill Tilly for managing all of the at Greatest Trek social media pages. Find and follow those on whatever social media you enjoy and use the hashtag GreatestTrek when you post about the show online. There are a number of ways you can support the show, including monthly support that helps cover production costs and keep the podcast going. Set up a membership at MaximumFun.org/join, and you'll get instant access to all of the bonus content available. You can also support the show for free by leaving a 5-star review or by recommending it to someone you know. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artists-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.